You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Columbia.
Good afternoon, this is Richard McCall reporting for Columbia Calling here in Bogota, Colombia. Here to talk about all things Colombian and dispel a few of the myths about this country that has become a newly fashionable place to visit, live, invest, and enjoy. All I can tell you is that I've had a great time moving here in 2007, full and married to a Colombian girl. We took a holiday just this week. That's another of the great benefits of Colombia. We went off to the Caribbean island of Providencia, just a couple of hours away. And pristine, white sandy beaches, turquoise blue seas, palm trees. And the two of us, low season, probably shared the beaches with only six other people at any time. Ate great fish, chilled out to reggae music, and just disconnected. Let's talk about Colombia then, apart from that. Last week has been a momentous week in this country, where we've had the peace dialogues going on in Cuba between the FARC revolutionary group and the Colombian government. If any of you are aware of this, this has been going on, the conflict, for more than 50 years. This is the 6-month mark of the peace dialogues in Cuba, the 9th round of talks, and supposedly some sort of agreement has been reached regarding land reform, which has been one of the main sticklers for the FARC guerrilla group here in Colombia. So we're hoping that something comes of that, and that we can say positively that Colombia is a country that is progressing, and we're moving forward, and hopefully to a brighter, more peaceful future. On that note, I'm happy to introduce my first guest on this show, Columbia Calling, another fellow Brit named Kevin Howlett, who's been here since 2011 full-time. He set up a website called columbia-politics.com. I'm sure Kevin will explain more about that website when we have a moment. He was a UK parliamentary lobbyist in the UK Parliament back in England. For some reason or other, Colombia attracted him. And now he's living here full time and making the most of it. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, thanks. Good afternoon, Richard.
Thank you for coming in. Kevin, what brought you to Colombia?
Well, I guess listening to your description of Providencia, one of the Caribbean islands, I think that's probably a good place to start. I mean, I came here first of all on holiday. I'd have travelled around all of Latin America. I've always loved Latin America. And when I got to Colombia, I thought, you know, we in England, and I think in America as well, we have a kind of concept of what the Latin spirit is. An ideal or an idea, if you like, of what Latin America is like and what Latin people are like. And I found that Colombia really captured that. Colombia was exactly how I imagined the Latin spirit to be, and I loved it. I fell in love with it straight away. The palm trees on the beaches that you described, as well as the cities, and the city that we both live in Bogota. It's a great city. I love it here. There's so many reasons to fall in love with Colombia. Yes, the sort of nature side, but it's more the people, I think. The way the people treat you, the way you interact with Colombians. You know, they say it's one of the happiest places on earth, and you really see that in the smiles and the way that people treat you and the way that people interact. So it's really for that reason, really, the people and, a whole host of reasons.
Okay, well, that's great. Yes, the Colombian Tourist Board has invested a great amount of money into showing that Colombia es pasión, Colombia is passion, and Colombia is magic realism, and they do a lot of videos showing smiling people and palm front beaches. This is true. Before we get into the business of what you do here, contrary to popular belief, when you come to Colombia, you're not going to be kidnapped as you walk off the jetway at El Dorado International Airport in Bogota, as Kevin can is testament to this. But Kevin, how did your family feel when you first said to them you were going to be live full-time in Colombia?
Well, they weren't particularly pleased by the news, I'll put it that way. When I first started travelling in Latin America, there was one thing, piece of advice that my dad told me. Don't travel to Peru and don't travel to Colombia. I never quite understood the Peru, but when I first started travelling, it was in 2002. So at that time, you know, the FARC guerrillas were a lot more active than they are now. It was just when Uribe, President Álvaro Uribe, was coming into power. So Colombia was a different place and it did have a very negative reputation. Things have changed a lot, but the reputation is changing, but it hasn't changed perhaps with the same speed as perhaps things have progressed in the country. So the perception at home, certainly from my family, was that it's going to be pretty dangerous you living there. How come? Why on earth are you leaving England? You've got a good job working in the parliament in the UK. Why on earth do you want to go to Colombia? But over time, I sort of sent them pictures, showed them little videos of what Colombia was like, and they soon sort of began to see why I had fallen in love with it. But yeah, sure, they weren't particularly happy, bit concerned, but, you know, like with most people, when you actually come to Colombia and see what the reality is, you can't help but fall in love with it and can't help but want to stay here.
Tell me, have your parents come out and visited?
Ah, well, you see, they're supposed to be coming out to visit me in the next few months, but I haven't heard anything about it for a while. So they want to come and visit and stay for a month and get to know Colombia and really find out why I fell in love with it. Well, they will do, but they haven't come yet.
Clearly they're waiting for the price for the flights to drop.
I'm sure it's that.
It's nothing
else.
I'm sure
it's that. I'm sure it's nothing I've done.
But, I mean, you've come here and, as I said before, your family had their doubts, but now they've been won over. And, of course, when they come over, they will understand why, as so many parents, my parents came out as well.
How long did they take to come out?
No, quite quickly. Yeah. I mean, indeed, quite quickly. In fact, my dad had worked here in the 1970s, but he wasn't overwhelmingly pleased either that I moved here, but when he'd come out and seen what I was doing and my follies that actually turned into decent business ventures and what have you, he could see it. We're young people, we've got things to give and got drive and energy, and of course everyone, my parents, as your parents will obviously note, the security situation, it has improved. Colombia has a justifiably poor reputation, but it's also a place that you can come and visit. And as you mentioned, the Colombian people are so eager for you to come here and to enjoy their country. But so you came here in 2011, you've been setting up your things. Do you feel as if you've been, you must feel as if you've been accepted here?
Yeah, I feel like I've been accepted as part of a wider Colombian family. I lived for a while outside of Bogota, and I spent a lot of time with a couple of Colombian families, and I was treated, just like a member of that family. It's very easy to get to know people here because they always start things with a smile, and if people start with a smile, it's an easy way to open a conversation. I don't ever find that people look at me strangely or ask, what on earth you're doing here. Or any of those sorts of questions that you might get asked, perhaps if you were moving to England, you might get. I found here that I've been accepted a lot more quickly than perhaps I would imagine someone moving to England would be accepted. So quite incredible, really. There's a real generosity of spirit, I think, in the Colombian nation that, despite all the hardship they've, or perhaps because of all the hardship they've gone through, they're very willing to, live every day, which kind of means that it's quick, easy to make those relationships. So I do feel very, very, very much part of a Colombian culture, very much part of Colombian way of life. And I've made a real effort to get to know everything about Colombian culture as well, so that it's not just a one-way process. I mean, I've very much focused on the language, very much focused on the culture and the music. basically because I love it. It's great.
Well, this is a reality of being an expat in another country. I mean, you and I have both made the the very big decision to come and live here. We're not coming to live here as if we were in England. We're coming to live here as if we were, in Colombia.
Exactly.
And so there's a very important level that has to be understood. We're not stuck just in the Irish or the English pub and on Saturdays watching the football.
It would be easy to do. And yes. There are people that do stick to that way of life, yes.
But it's something that, you live in a country and you have to respect the country, their customs, and become part of it. And I'm sure that enables and speeds up the acceptance and the process of becoming more involved in society. But let me move on a little bit, Kevin, and say a little bit about what you're doing here. I mean,
yeah.
Clearly, you came to Colombia knowing that there were going to be opportunities, or believing that you're going to have opportunities here. And, I've got you're teaching. You're a university lecturer. You've taught in two universities here in Bogota.
Yeah.
You're a business and a political consultant, because you've got that background from the UK. You're a journalist as well. And so we can focus a little bit now on your website. I'm going to spell it out for you there. It's Colombia. Colombia-politics.com. Now, Colombia is spelled Colombia. It's not spelled with the U, like British Columbia. It is Colombia, and there's also been quite a big Facebook campaign by Colombians about that. But anyway, so Kevin has this website, Colombia-politics.com, Colombia-politics, and it's the only English language website dedicated to politics in this country. Why did you set this up, Kevin?
Why did I set it up? I, as you mentioned, I was a parliamentary lobbyist in the UK. Politics is something that I've got in my blood. I love it. I can't leave it wherever I am in the world. When I came to Colombia, I looked around for information on what the political situation was like. There was very, very little in the way of English language coverage, apart from what you write, of course, and a couple of other outlets. There's not a lot out there, and nothing that's really dedicated specifically to politics, which is the area that I'm interested in. So I saw an opening in the market, and I'm a political commentator. I like to analyse politics. I like to follow it, but I also see it as a bit of a project to demystify Colombia itself. When people talk about Colombian politics, they imagine, the FARC guerrillas, or they imagine the paramilitaries, or they imagine the negative sides. And I want to present to the world, in my own small way, a different picture, a more complete picture of what Colombia is like. And I think it's important that as interest grows in Colombia, as Colombia develops on the national stage, that there's more information out there. So I saw a gap in the market for that. I got started as a personal blog about a year and a half ago perhaps, and then in August last year I changed it into a full-blown website, and I've now got 11 or 12 writers that write frequently for it. Any listeners here that are interested can get in touch with me, which is Kevin Howlett at Colombia-politics.com, and I'd be more than willing to hear from you if you want to contribute. It's a democratic project, so we like to have different voices on there. I know, Richard, that you've contributed with a couple of articles as well, so thanks for that.
You're very welcome. Well, it's interesting that it's a democratic project. I think one of the key things that Kevin has been trying to put across is that, it's not a voice piece for the government, and it's not a voice piece against the government. It's
absolutely
representing all sides of the political spectrum here in Colombia, in a country that is very polarized politically, in particular with the peace dialogues taking place at the moment. And it's an important website, and I know that English speakers and of course political enthusiasts around the world are looking at this website. It reads very easily, it's clear, it looks a bit like a newspaper, and it's frequently updated. You do have a Facebook site where people can then, I'm sure that's just Facebook, ColombiaPolitics.com.
It's Facebook, Facebook.com/ColombiaPolitics.
And he's on Twitter at ColPolitics, ColPolitics, it's a Twitter account. And so, there's no reason why we can't be informed. But this is the thing, you saw a market for a website in English about Colombian politics, because just to be frank, there wasn't any reporting on Colombia.
I call it a bit of an unreported world, and I think it is. There's a lazy sort of projection of Colombia, as I said, that's dominated by the FARC or the paramilitaries or whatever, or narco traffickers. And it's beyond that, there's not much reporting of it. It's a country of, you know, 45 odd million people. It's a growing economy. We're just about to be accepted into the OECD. So it's, you know, it's a place that really deserves a more intelligent debate, a more intelligent coverage, more intelligent reporting. And I wanted him, as I say, in my way to contribute to that debate.
Yeah, very important indeed. Now, as a political commentator, the peace process, this isn't a peace process that's going to end the conflict here in Colombia. It's a peace dialogue that's taking place between the FARC, which is the largest it's the largest and most polemic of the guerrilla groups that we have here in Colombia. And so, you know, are you optimistic about what's taking place in Havana, Cuba?
I am very optimistic. I think that, I mean, when Santos announced, President Santos announced that the peace talks were going to take place in at the end of August last year, we were all, I think, incredibly optimistic, because it's perhaps, you know, the last time that peace talks took place was 2002. It's a real chance, I think, to end this conflict. Now, the process itself, as you said, is more just to kind of arrive at the accord, the agreement, which will be put an end to the conflict. But peace, of course, will be something that takes a lot longer to achieve, a lasting peace where the society is brought back together. But if we can get to a point that within a number of months, perhaps by the end of this year, the FARC guerrillas have agreed to lay down their arms, that would be great news for Colombia. I'm positive because it looks like they're doing the way the talks have been organised, with an agenda of 5 points, is very methodical, very clearly set out. Now, there are lots of people that don't view it as positively as I do, and I can understand those arguments. And it is difficult to keep viewing it positively when you have some of the discourse that comes out from both sides, but mainly from the FARC. You do get a sense that there's a... You do wonder how serious they are about it if you listen to exactly what they're saying. But you've got to remember with negotiations that this is a negotiation, not a... they're not going there to give up. They're not giving in. The FARC, even though they've been very much reduced in terms of their numbers, they still have a power to operate. So they are there to negotiate the end of the conflict. They're not there to give in. So even though, if you look at it very detailed, it's very easy to be less than positive about the outcome, I still remain positive. And I think the news that they signed this historic agreement last week should give us even more cause for hope. Let's fingers crossed. You can never quite tell until things are done. But hopefully in a few months we can have an agreement that the FARC have finally decided, after 50 years of conflict, to put down their arms. And that would be great news for all of us, of course.
And of course, it would be a fantastic step for Colombia on the international stage. You know, it would be a very progressive step for Colombia to show that they were able, you know, with the help of, let's say, we had Norway and Venezuela are both guarantors of the peace dialogues, and we've got Chile there as well. But, you know, to have organized this, to have it worked out. I mean, these are the actions of a mature nation, or a nation that is maturing. Better to say that. But if were it to happen, I mean, it's almost some years ago, this was almost unthinkable. Mm-hmm. Were it to happen that peace with the FARC were to be achieved, would the other guerrilla group, the ELN, the Ejército de Liberación Nacional, which is the National Liberation Army, which is a much smaller group. I can't quite recall. Perhaps Kevin will remind me what their numbers are. But I would imagine that they will start making steps as well to perhaps engage in peace dialogues with the government.
Yeah, I mean, there's been all sorts of rumours circulating around that they've been, you know, sort of trying to get involved, trying to get I think they see, it depends what the FARC agreement is. You know, I think the FARC will get a pretty good agreement, you know, something that works for them quite well. They'll be guaranteed political presence, a role in politics, guaranteed a part in that. And I think the ELN will see the same possibility. It's their actions at the moment, of course, suggest that maybe they're positioning themselves, trying to get themselves in a good position for negotiation. They've sort of undergone a series of attacks fairly recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think that part of the thing will also be that after the agreement's signed, the implementation, and I can see in the same way that happened in the UK when the Northern Ireland peace agreement was signed, the IRA, of course, then fragmented to a certain extent, and you had the real IRA and other groups that weren't willing to accept the peace agreement. And I can foresee a similar situation in Colombia. So you might have a situation that the FARC guerrillas and maybe then even the ELN later on agree, if you like, the executive of those two groups, but that these groups, the violent expression, will totally disappear, I think, is probably too optimistic a position to foresee in the near future. So I suspect you might have, yes, the two groups coming in, if you like, the other guerrilla groups, but that there will also be a splintering effect as well.
Well, I mean, do you think we'll start to see some of these, let's say they both put down their weapons and they enter civilian life, will we start to see them in politics?
I think yes. Everything that's coming out of Havana suggests so. The FARC guerrillas are positioning themselves. They do have a very political discourse, the guys at the top as part of the secretariat, and they are making the case through, as I say, very political language. I know that on point three, I think it is on the agenda for the peace talks, is political participation. So you would expect that the agreement will be to either give them perhaps a number of seats, guaranteed seats, or a certain way of collecting votes that guarantees they have a say. So I think it's almost certain that we'll see members of the FARC or members of the FARC in Parliament or in the political institutions in the future. And I think, you know, that changing the bullet for the ballot boxes has always proved to be an important step in any democratic process. So I, for one, would, as a concept, think that it's a very interesting one. So, yeah, we should expect to see them in Congress. I mean, there's some people that suggest they might even be there after the elections next year. I think that's probably a bit too soon. Perhaps the elections in 2018 is probably a more realistic time frame to see perhaps some of those demobilised guerrillas in Congress.
Well, of course, you know, these things do take time. And the Irish, the peace process in Ireland didn't happen overnight. And of course, they're still ironing out issues. And so we shouldn't rush things here in Colombia, but we are just happy that something is moving ahead. And of course, from my perspective, working in tourism, working as a journalist, you know, with my own little hotel and so on and so forth, were the FARC to put down their weapons, were either of the groups to put down their weapons, Colombia becomes a much greater place, a much more attractive place to those of us looking, you know, other people looking to come and move here to invest in this country, because it has been divorced from the idea of international travel and international business for over 30 years. I mean, it's only been the hardcore people who go out and look for the most, topsy-turvy, to put it in the best, in the most polite English, the most topsy-turvy destination to make what they can, and then they flee to the next worst place, let's say. So, you know, it's not just the crazies. If these weapons are put down, you know that banks are going to lend for businesses in Colombia, and we've seen more travel agencies, and we've seen Hilton, you know, constructing here in downtown Bogota, and we've seen Radisson Hotels and the JW Marriotts and more boutique shops and restaurants you can eat. I mean, it's fantastic eating here in Bogota, but you can see a change. There is something going on. Since I've been living here full time in 2007, something is happening. It's a renaissance moment, let's say, for Bogota and for Colombia, that this is happening. Of course, Colombia needs to get its act together and start working on the infrastructure in the country, because you can't hope to advance like your neighbors, like Peru, which is booming, and Ecuador, without infrastructure. So if there were to be some sort of peace dialogue, successful peace dialogue, we're looking at more opportunities, more availability for foreigners to come in and create their dreams. Now, Kevin obviously has seen that. We've talked at length about his website, but we know he works in universities, but he's also, I wanted to go back to the point of, he has Columbia Consulting, his own little company. I mean, these are three. How old are you, Kevin, to have set up all of these things? I mean, it's almost crazy. Columbia Consulting. What is Columbia Consulting? What are you hoping to achieve with this?
Yeah, well, maybe I do feel a bit older than I am after the last couple of years of work. I think, I mean, as you say, Columbia is a place of real opportunity. If you look at the way the economy has grown, it doubled, the GDP doubled, I think, between 2002 to 2010. There's a lot more people interested in investing in Bogota, investing in the rest of Colombia, coming to visit Colombia, but also wanting to sort of put down roots and stay here, like we do. Mm-hmm. So I know, I've really sort of worked very hard at trying to find out all aspects of Colombian culture, to understand the politics, to understand what makes Colombians tick, how they interact, how they do business. And I want to share that experience with the people who are interested in Colombia, interested in coming here, interested in investing. Because when I came, it was a bit harder, I think. We're only talking a couple of years ago, but the pace of change is quite significant. And there wasn't that much information out there. So my business, the Colombia Consulting business, works with Colombian businesses, but also with international businesses. Now, the Colombia side is working with them on their communication strategies, how to present a better message, how to communicate to attract new clients, etc., using some of the tactics that I used in lobbying throughout 10 years in the UK Parliament. And then on the other side, the international thing, which will perhaps interest more the listeners, is that if they're thinking of investing in Colombia, they want to know who the politicians are that they need to speak to, who the industry leaders are that they need to speak to, and more importantly, how they need to speak to them, because Colombia is a country of some quite obvious idiosyncrasies, shall we say. The way that Colombians interact is very Colombian, and it's been a sort of country that's almost existed in a bit of a bubble, because not a lot of people came and visited. So Colombia has grown up, the economy of Colombia has grown up basically by Colombians working with, interacting with Colombians. And I think for an American business or a European business coming here, it can be wonderful, but it can also be quite difficult to understand exactly what needs to be done to get business deals signed. And what I do is demystify Colombia, explain how it works effectively. So that's what Colombia Consulting does.
I mean, aside from the, yes, let's say the bureaucracy. I mean,
there's some of that, yes.
Aside from the bureaucracy, you're also explaining some of the nuances of this country and some of the cultural differences, obviously. I mean, moving to a new country does create a cultural conflict. You are always, in search for your identity. And it's tough. And Colombia is no exception to this rule. I mean, since 2007, I personally have been struggling with the paperwork, but apparently it's getting easier. Apparently it's getting easier, and apparently the institutions are becoming more accessible. And I suppose this is happening. I suppose it is happening, and we're not frowned at and looked at like foreign creatures anymore. It's accepted that we're foreigners being here and working and participating, and this is only good for Colombia. But one of the things, as you said, Colombia has existed in a bubble. Colombia's politics have been of isolationism for a great deal of time, obviously because of the political situation, but previously to that. And so to have foreigners here was always something very strange. You know, you, again, like I mentioned earlier, you're always going to have your more hardcore or maybe more, you know, sort of unhinged people here. These places attract them. I probably, you know, fall into that category. But yes, I mean, I would say, I think Kevin probably agreed with me that if you were to come to Colombia, even as a visitor, even as someone thinking of investing or even just, you know, cultural curiosity, you have to speak Spanish.
I mean, you do. Particularly, I mean, even in Bogota, but if you're outside of Bogota, it's absolutely essential. But also, because you'll have a much better experience. When I came here, I was determined I didn't want to fall in and only hang out with expats. Richard, of course, is an exception. I've got a lot of expat friends here. But you do have to, you don't have to, but it's much richer experience if you get involved, if you interact more with the Colombians. Because as I said before, the most exciting and great thing about this country is the people. And if you can't speak Spanish, you're automatically blocked, if you like, from being able to understand the culture in more detail. And I think that would be a tragedy, really, for people coming here not being able to interact. It is, as you said, as I said, and as you agreed, it is sometimes does feel like a bit of a bubble. You know, the Macondo idea of García Márquez in 100 Years of Solitude is, when you're here, you kind of think, well, I'm not sure how much magical there was, but it's more realism than magical realism. You know, there's a real, when he describes the Macondo, the way that people operate, it's a funny sort of culture that the more you know the culture, the more it befuddles you. It's a sort of strange, wondrous place that operates with its own logic. And if you don't speak Spanish, you're going to be very much excluded from that. And as I say, it's much more enriching if you can really become part of the Colombian family in a way.
This is true. I think, you know, at every point we have to have our expat community, you know, a group of friends with whom, you know, you can meet up and it's touch base with the mother country.
Yeah.
But, sometimes that's helps. Sometimes that keeps, a steady hand and maybe less grey hairs. But
I don't know. They're coming along nicely, are they?
But yes, it's an important step, as you say. Now, I've renovated houses in the small town of Mompox. I find, and also when I go to press conferences or if I'm conducting interviews as a journalist, even with a general, even with someone who's, let's say he's a builder on my roof, and from every level, I find that there's a certain way of speaking to Colombians, and they enjoy being asked about their families. I find that, you know, I can talk to the guy who's laying the tiles on my roof before I get to the crux of what I need, which is basically lay the tiles on the roof. And let's say I'll need to ask after his wife, you know, after his children, see how everything's going. And this is fine. This is civilized. I mean, I enjoy this, but this is not something I would do in the UK. This is a big difference.
Yeah, we're much more direct, aren't we? Mm. We'll get straight to the point, which is good in a way, but it's... But as you say, it's rather intoxicating the way that Colombian families are. They envelop you and you can't escape them. The Colombian mother is a very big figure here, and you can't... The Colombian mother, you just have to obey her. You have to do everything to make sure that you're in line with what she's telling you to do. They say it's a machista society, but I really think the mothers are the ones that run the... Everything, you know, the household economics here are quite a thing. And you do have to interact. And this is part of the thing about Colombia Consulting, that the way you interact with Colombians, as you say, you have to focus on these things. Otherwise, you just look rude. They don't quite understand if you start a sentence with a direct question or if you start a conversation by going directly to the point of business. And you have to understand as well that timing here, I'm sure you'll agree, Richard, that timing and punctuality just don't exist. So if you have a meeting at 3 o'clock, it's very likely you might be 3:30 before the chap turns up. And the reason that is because people are willing to have conversations with people. If they meet them in the street, they'll have a little chat. And the idea that, oh, I've got to go, I've got to run off, I can't talk to you about your family at the moment, that doesn't exist here. It's a warmth. It's a real warmth that can be frustrating if you don't understand it. But you have to kind of go with the flow, I think. But the family here is an institution that's incredible, amazing, occasionally frustrating. And you mentioned, I know that you're married to a Colombian. I won't ask about what the relationships are like with that family. But I know that my own experiences have been that the families really take you in, and you become part of a member of the family very quickly. And it's a great place to be, I think, in that sense.
By the same rationale as you were saying, people, you know, in a conversation where you have to stop, talk about families, you can't make a direct question. By the same rationale, if you make a direct question, you're not getting a direct answer.
No, you have to. You're not, and you have to learn here to be able to read between the lines. They say a lot of, what a Colombian doesn't say is more important than what they do say sometimes. And it depends. There's codes. Colombians are very civilized and they're very polite. You know, when I grew up in England and when you grew up in England, I think it was an even a much more politer place than perhaps it is now. But Colombia still has that traditional, polite, gentlemanly way of behaviour, of interacting with people. And so people don't tend to say things in a very direct, aggressive way. Sometimes they might be communicating that, and you have to know, really, by the intonation of the voice or what they're leaving out of a sentence to come to the conclusion exactly what they're saying. Again, that makes the communication here a complicated task. And if you don't speak Spanish, and if you don't speak Colombian, because there's a difference between normal Spanish and Colombian, there's lots of phrases here that are very Colombian, and you really do have to know how to deal with them to be able to, I think, prosper here.
Yes. Now, yes, as I said, family is everything. If I'm going to make a little reference to my extended family here, my mother-in-law is in control completely. she commands from far away, but she commands. It's not so bad.
You can't cross her, though.
No, I can't cross her. She has 12 siblings, no less than 12 siblings, scattered all around Colombia. And so if I ever break down in my car anywhere, there's always someone from the extended family not far away, cousins. I don't think my wife can even number the amount of cousins that she has. So as I said, family here is everything. But now let's move back a bit. And we both live here in Bogota. I come and go. I travel a lot. I go here and there. As I mentioned at the beginning, I was in Providencia, getting sunburnt and doing very little, disconnecting from the world for 4 days.
How nice.
Very nice, sipping back some rums and imagining Henry Morgan from his base there, from where he sacked Panama. But I live here in Bogota. You live full-time here in Bogota. How is Bogota, the capital city, bustling Bogota as a place to live?
It's a great place. I lived for 8-9 years in London, which is another great city. But Bogota used to be, I think it was called something like the second most dangerous city in the Western Hemisphere in the 90s and into the early 2000s. It was certainly up there, and they had the Cartucho, which is the barrio, which was supposedly the most dangerous barrio in the whole of the Western Hemisphere. But things have moved on a lot since then. It feels like, in some parts where I live, it feels quite, in some ways, European. You mentioned there's lots of good restaurants here, there's lots of variety of food. It does feel like a very progressive, very intelligent sort of city. There are hundreds of universities and hundreds of thousands of students. And it does have that kind of, it used to be called the Athens of Latin America, which I think is stretching it a bit, to be honest. But it is a very cultural place. They're just reopening the Opera House, which will be great. But the beauty of Bogota, I think, is the contrast. I always think of the Dickens book, Tale of Two Cities, and obviously that was about London, but I think it should actually be about Bogota, because you can be in the centre, which is And just south of the centre, which you can see some amazing levels of distressing poverty. And within half an hour on the Transmillenia, which is the rapid, in inverted commas, transport system here, public transport system, in half an hour you can be in the north of the city and feel like you're in parts of the US or parts of Europe. And you can have that contrast, you see that contrast all the time, and I think that's what makes it so interesting. A place to be, and for people like we who like to write, there's a hell of a lot of material here. Every day something happens, something crazy happens. But Bogota, I think, is a city that could do with investment in infrastructure. Let's be honest about it. Its pavements are pretty hopeless. There's potholes everywhere. The traffic is horrendous. But it has a real charm, and it is a very cultural place, and I'm very happy living here, certainly.
It is, I mean, well, I'll set the scene a little bit up here for those who don't know Bogota. Along the western edge, no, the eastern edge of the city, the string of mountains, which is the sort of beginning of an Andes range, and the city. It feels like it's been poured onto the side of these mountains and then splays out to the west, northwest and south. So you never really feel as if you're lost in Bogota, because as soon as you can look up and see the mountains, you know more or less where you are. And there's some very good landmarks, and Monserrate, which is a chapel on the top of a mountain. We are at 2,600 meters above sea level. I mean, it does make you short of breath. But Bogota is a very scenic city, despite there not being much greenery, let's say, at street level. Anytime you just, your eyes stray upwards, you're looking at the mountains and the pine forests of which you can hike into. And of course, there's much to explore from the downtown colonial Candelaria area, which is where the contemporary Bogota was created. And then of course you come further, as Kevin mentioned, there's a road, it's the Calle de los Comuneros, which pretty much divides north and south. So from just below the center of Bogota, and it's the socio-economic divide is visible. You can see the difference in investment, the difference in housing, the difference in clothing. But then, of course, and then you go up way up north, and you might as well be in any European or North American city, and especially not far from where we are right now, which is a barrio called Chapinero, which is pretty much central to everything. We've got the mountains on one side, and we've got stock market within 10 blocks. So we've got museums around us, cinemas, the gourmet zone for restaurants. We have talked about restaurants. I mean, Bogota is a city. I mean, a lot of people say a city in spite of itself, but it was, it's a city. It's here. In spite of everything, it's still going to be here.
And there's 9 million of us living here.
And there's 9 million. It's not going anywhere. It's a big city. It's a fun city. And for those of you who like nightlife, it is pretty unstoppable. The Latin spirit. But yes, infrastructure is lacking, and let's say customer service is lacking. But this is just because it's never existed before. These things are coming. But it is like Bogota's like the stately gentleman of Colombian cities. It's by far the most cultural of Colombian cities. You will enjoy Cartagena, but it's a small society. You'll enjoy Medellin because the weather's so much better. People love Cali for the dancing and the warmth and its proximity to the Pacific coast. But if you want culture, and if you want a place which has something going on all the time, and a lot of the time these things are free, museums and shows and what have you, it's Bogota, it's the only thing. And the thing is about Colombia, is Colombia's an incredibly centralized country. So if you're coming here for business, I'm not even going to say chances are, you are going to have to spend time in Bogota. So pack the high altitude medicines and drink more water, because you're going to need to be here. Now, I think we'll move on a little bit and just say, if you are telling, so you're talking, let's say you're talking to a friend back in the UK, Kevin, and he says, well, I'd like to read up on Colombia before I go out. I'm going to come out, I'm going to come and visit you, we're going to travel around the country a bit. What literature can I get my hands on that's not, let's say, a guidebook? suggesting or more or less pushing me in the direction of various places which are acceptable. What literature, actual narrative literature, would you say I should have to read?
Well, I'd read your website first.
Thank you, that's richardmccoll.com.
And then mine afterwards, which is columbiapolitics.com. Literature, I mean, I read English at university, so I love literature, and I remember reading García Márquez in English first, and then I read it in Spanish, and I really got it. I think you have to read, you have to start with García Márquez, and I think you should read all of it. If you want to find out a bit about the history, Noticia de un Secuestro, or what is that in English?
News
of a Kidnapping, yeah. Of course, 100 Years of Solitude, Love in a Time of Cholera. Read all of those, and it will take you a long time to get through them. That really is the best literature. It's other than that, there's a funny sort of, there's a bit, in London, for example, you have lots of schools of literature, but Columbia hasn't really had that. There's lots of writers, but not as well known perhaps internationally. So I would do that, but there are other websites as well, that not literature as such, but other websites that aren't guidebooks, but give a good idea of what Columbia is like to travel. See Columbia, that we are both friends of. CColumbia.com, I think, isn't it? Off to Columbia is another one. Two great websites that talk about what Colombian culture is like, and they'll give you ideas of where to go, not just Cartagena, not just Santa Marta, not just Medellin, but also the places that are a bit off the beaten track. And there you get a real taste of what Colombia is like. They talk a lot about the typical food that we have in Colombia, the ajiaco and bandeja paisa, and you have to try those things when you come here. So I'd recommend those two websites as well as yours, mine, and García Márquez. I think, you know, you have to start with García Márquez, don't you?
I think it's necessary. Anyone coming to Colombia has to know of Gabriel García Márquez.
Especially if they're visiting you in Mompox.
Of course, yeah.
Which feels like it is something straight out of a García Márquez.
It is the Macondo of 100 Years of Solitude. Nothing happens, and it's
nothing
perfect.
Nothing ever will.
And he actually quoted our town saying, you know, sometimes we dream of Mompox, but sometimes we dream of her, she doesn't exist. But yes, it does exist because I have a hotel there. Literature is thin on the ground. There are some books out there. Unfortunately, a great deal of them only deal with
talk about the drugs and kidnapping.
Exactly.
But I'm not going to give any publicity to those books.
No, we're not going to talk about those. A decent one, Tom Feeling's book.
Yeah.
Tom Feeling wrote a book called Short Walks from Bogota. I think it should be...
I should have mentioned that I reviewed it on my website.
Yes.
That's a very good one. Yeah. That is a very good one.
Written last year, published last year.
Published last year, and he's basically in Bogota, but the beauty is that he talks about, through trips out to different parts of the countryside, he talks about, you know, the real Colombia beyond Bogota. So that's a really good one. Short Walks from Bogota.
And we you know, and he came to Mompox and he stayed at my place, and I'm quoted in there too. So of course, like, lends it some gravity.
Absolutely.
You know, blow my own trumpet a little bit there, but no, I think that's possibly the most important one. Michael Jacobs' book, The River of Memories.
Yeah.
Where he travels the Magdalena River. Michael Jacobs, very, very. Accomplished writer, who's written about the Andes and also train travel.
Yeah,
I think
he's done a few of those.
But aside from that, there is a dearth of what we would call sort of top notch.
We should write a book.
We should write a book. It's as easy as that. We'll just sit down and write a book. Now, Kevin, you've been here since 2011. I've been meaning to ask this all the time. You're a busy man, universities. Websites, businesses, so on and so forth. You haven't got out of Bogota.
Well, no, not since I came back. I mean, I lived in other places. I lived in Popayan for around 8 or 9 months in Cauca, but I haven't been out of Bogota for a long time. No, I'm desperate to get out and see a bit of the countryside. Unfortunately, it sort of kept me in. I know and love and have visited all of Colombia, but since I've been living here, I haven't managed to get out, which is yeah, a bit of a pain, really.
We should mention that Popayan is a UNESCO city in the south of Colombia. It's known as the White City, a very beautiful colonial city.
Oh, it's beautiful, yeah.
A couple of hours from Cali, no?
About two and a half hours from Cali, yeah.
And you can get there over the mountains from San Agustin as well.
From there you can visit San Agustin, you can even go to Neiva, you can go to Pasto. It's a different place from Bogotá. So, it's a wonderful sort of step back in history, I think. It's not like Mompox, but it's got that colonial. I think it rivals Cartagena as the most beautiful city in Colombia. Many would disagree with me, but perhaps living there gives you a different perspective on it.
Well, of course, this is why we have different opinions. That's fine. And where else would you like to go? Where would you recommend people to go? Let's say, well, I mean, we know that people are going to go to Cartagena. Cartagena's direct flights from Europe, direct flights in the United States. You know, people
it's
are
the
going
entry
to go,
point, isn't
and,
it?
And it's been the mecca of Colombian tourism since Colombian tourism has existed.
Yeah.
It's very easy to visit because you are contained within a walled city. It's very sophisticated now. Mm-hmm. Very good hotels and restaurants. But aside from that, Kevin, in your travels around Colombia, what struck you as places that people should visit? We'll keep Mompox out of this now.
Yeah, let's keep Mompox. That's obviously on the list. I really love the coffee zone. I'll be honest. It's the sort of the verdant mountains there are just so picturesque. So we're talking there anything from Medellin through Pereira, Salento, which is a lovely village. It's growing, but it's a lovely village, about an hour, I think, from Pereira. And all that area, from all that stretch along the mountains there, is so picturesque, and it's where all the coffee plantations are. Colombia, of course, famous for its coffee. It was the main export. Still is, I think, the main export. I love that area. I think anywhere around there would be a great place to stay. You can stay on some fincas, on some farms. You can totally separate yourself from the world, or you can stay also in Medellin, which is a nice, modern, bustling city. Not anything like as big as Bogotá, but as you say, it's probably prettier, and it's certainly got better weather. Anywhere along there is great. But, you know, the area that I really like are the ones that sort of tucked away on the Pacific. So, down by Cali, there's a place called Los Ladrillos, which is where you can watch whales swim past in certain parts of the year, and it feels like you're stepping into a totally different world. It's the community there is very, it feels very Caribbean, I think. It feels very obvious African descendancy of the population there. And it's beautiful, it's kind of green, it's got that, it just feels very tropical, and I like that tropical feel. It feels quite... the tropics are always a bit crazy, aren't they? And I think down by the coast there, particularly by Cali, it's madness. It can be a very odd place and a very large step away from the modernity of Bogotá, I think. So anywhere on the coffee zone and some little spots on the Pacific, I'd recommend.
But this is the thing about Colombia as well. I mean, we'll start wrapping up. But, you know, Colombia in a nutshell, were you to come and just... come to Bogota and then say, oh, I want to explore. You can take flights almost anywhere.
Yeah.
Within an hour, let's say 2 hours, you're in the Amazon jungle. With an hour and 15 minutes, you're on the Caribbean coast. A couple of hours more, you're on the Pacific coast. There are direct flights from, I believe, Fort Lauderdale with Spirit Airlines down to Armenia, which is directly smack bang in the center of the coffee region. I mean, you can get everywhere, from deserts to mountains to jungles to savannas. There is everything here. You know, Colombia has been on the cusp of being explored and being discovered, and now is the time to come. So you know, I'll take this moment and thank Kevin for his time.
Thank you. Pleasure.
And of course, please look up his website, which is www.colombia.com. Get in touch with him there if you want to write for him, or get in touch, just drop a line.
Yeah. And let me know what you think. Feedback.
Feedback's always appreciated. And this has been, I've been Richard McCall and Colombia Calling, and we hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you very much.